solar panels work in winter? Solar energy output in Australia throughout winter is surprisingly high in some cities. You can learn more about better solar energy at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar to learn more. GLG Greenlife Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. Welcome to the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along to a Tuesday night edition of The First Serve. Very nice to be in the chair. We've been shifting around a little bit the last couple of weeks, but I've got to say, and I just said to Sammy on the way in, more than happy to make way for the Tassie Jack Jumpers last night. How good was that? More than happy to be handballed to Tuesday night. That was brilliant on the radio. I think anyone who's listened to me long enough at this radio station knows that I love the underdog in sport. So that was brilliant. That's what we're all about, live sport here on SEN. So great to bring you the First Serve. There is a stack happening in the world of tennis as always. Happy to take your calls tonight, 1300 736 736. The hour is yours. You can text us 0433 98 1116, all thanks to Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. So you can shop to your heart's content, tennisdirect.com.au. Get that nice 10% discount store-wide using the code FIRSTSERVE10. On the B-Solar menu tonight, all the latest. The winner's roll we'll give you in just a moment. The mailbag is back tonight. There's some juicy stuff in there. And the editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine, Vivian Christie, will be along a little bit later on this hour. We start with the honour roll. It's Diego Schwartzman times two. We start with little Sebastian Baez.
It's all over. He's done it. Sebastian Baez wins his maiden title here in Estoril. He's had the week of his life. And the 21-year-old has come of age here in Portugal. The little powerhouse, 5 foot seven, who packs a punch, is a worthy winner here in the Portuguese sunshine. And he joins the likes of Guillermo Vias, Juan Martín del Potro, David Nalbandian, Diego Schwartzman, Guillermo Coria, Gaston Gaudio. The list is endless of great Argentine players to have won tour titles over the years. And Sebastian Baez, the latest to be added to that list.
You had a special connection with Francis Tiafoe because you practiced before the tournament and you saw his bracelet saying, "Why not me?" And then you signed after every single match that you won at the tournament on the camera, "Why not me?" So can you go through the final and explain which were the key moments in this final?
We never hit, never this week. We are more close, but yeah, just this week. And I saw in the TV the bracelet. So my coach said, "You have to do a tattoo about that." I said, "Yes, that's the key to try to be confident in every time, in every point, in slow or when I go down or go up. So try to be quiet and do the best I can."
He got it done. All 170 centimetres of Sebastian Baez. Exactly the same height as his fellow Argentinian, Diego Schwartzman. It's an interesting comparison of their two journeys. I'll get to that in just a moment. 1-300-736-736. Plenty coming through on the text. Get to those. 0433 98 1116. So he wins the Estoril Open. Great setting there on the coast in Portugal, the ATP 250. He beat Francis Tiafoe, who won the first two games of that match overnight. And then he went on a nice tear. Of course, he made the final in Santiago a little bit earlier this year. He's been establishing himself. He's climbed from 99 to 40 in the rankings. So he is the real deal. And it is a career high, 15 and 11, the win-loss. So he beats on the way through, of course, Joao Sousa, who's a tough man to beat from Portugal. He beat Marin Cilic, Grand Slam finalist, twice. Richard Gasquet, Grand Slam semi-finalist. And he beats one of the toughest players on clay, the hardened Albert Ramos Vinolas, the tough lefty from Spain. So he certainly deserved the title. There's no doubt about that. He also made the semis of the Next Gen ATP finals last year. And just the comparisons to Diego Schwartzman, who's currently 15 in the world. Diego actually had to pull out of this tournament, citing fatigue. He's had a pretty good year himself. Same height, 170 centimetres. We know Diego's been as high as 8 in the world. And his first title actually came at the age of 23. That was back in 2016. Sebastian's first title has come at the age of 21. So it'll be fascinating to see whether he surpasses what the great Diego Schwartzman has done. He's been one of my favourites across the tour. He had one Aussie, Jordan Thompson. He went out first round to Ablot Remos Vinolis. A couple of the other storylines out of Estoril. Felix Auger-Aliassime was the top seed, 10 in the world. He started the season in a blaze of glory. He was 15-4 at one stage. He's now 19-10. So we know he didn't fire at Indian Wells. He didn't fire at Miami. He's 4-4 on the clay so far. He went down to Seb Korter, who is going to play Felix many times, you would think, throughout their careers. And Seb himself went down to Francis Tiafoe in a really tough semi-final. But he's 21. He's jumped up 7 spots to 30 in the world. And he's just heading north in a nice incremental fashion. It's not Carlos Alcaraz. Everyone goes on these different journeys, a bit like Holger Rune, who I'll talk about in just a moment. Lost to Tiafoe, but he is just tracking very nicely towards the top 10 eventually. And I don't know if you saw this during the presentation ceremony. I love some of the presentation ceremonies of all these tournaments around the world. They didn't give him the old-fashioned check. They actually brought out this electronic machine and did the transaction live on court, and in dropped 81,000 euros, all live on TV. It was absolutely magnificent. So well done to Sebastian Baez, a young man who packs a punch at 170 centimetres. We're going to be talking about him for quite some time. I always love a good wildcard story, particularly in the doubles. So two Portuguese players, Nuno Borges and Cabral, who are a long-time childhood friends, Francisco Cabral. They defeated the top seeds Murray and Michael Venus on the way through in the semis. First ATP event, first main draw, first title together. So they've had a good period on the challenges. They've come through the juniors. So that is a good feel story. Matty Ebden and Max Purcell, who've been in good form from an Australian point of view. We know what they've been doing in doubles, certainly this year and at the back end of last year. They went out to first round. Interestingly, with Max, who is just struggling at the moment, certainly to qualify and have an impact, certainly singles-wise, after really good progression last year. He's just recently split with his coach, Nathan Healy. We'll talk about that. He's travelling the globe just with the girlfriend at the moment, and I think he's the lucky loser in a tournament this week. He's got a reprieve, Max, but he's certainly looking for a better singles output. Let's get to, we speak about Carlos Alcaraz and how good he is, but this young man is heading north in a hurry. The great young man from Denmark at 19, who won the BMW Open, Holger Rune.
Alexandrov has to retire.
Oh, this is such a shame. A final, a first final for both these players on the ATP Tour. It's a handshake. A retirement for Botik van der Sandschulp. It's a title win for Holger Rune here in Munich.
Yeah, it's not the way you want to win your first title when your opponent retires 7 games into the opening set, but you take it. He had a very good week. There's no doubt about that. We've been talking about Holger Rune, or Holter Vitas Nodskov Rune, who shortened his name. Thank goodness for that from a commentary point of view. But he's been tracking like Carlos since he was a young man. Former world junior number one. He is 45 in the world now. So he started the year at 103. So Alcaraz is the youngest 18-year-old inside the top 100. Holger is the youngest 19-year-old. And I love the presentation ceremony. We just talked about Estoril. So they come out, of course, the winner, and they get the Lederhosen shorts, which are a short or knee-length leather breech that are the traditional garment that is worn in some regions of Germany. And they actually put the banner around the player. He drops the dacks and puts on these shorts, comes out. The crowd are doing this standing ovation. And then he gets a BMW. The only problem for Holger is that he doesn't get his license till next week, so he couldn't jump in the driver's seat, so to speak. But his mother, Annika's been a great support. He spent a lot of time at the Mauritoglu Academy. Lars Christensen has been his coach since he was a young man. He is that driven to win like Alcaraz. He's another one. Can we take him as well under the AUS banner? He's a beauty, Holger Rune. He's the absolute real deal. John Millman went out first round, so Unfortunately, Johnny didn't fire a shot at the BMW Open over the past week. 1300 736 736 on the text, 0433 98 1116. Boris Becker. Yeah, we're going to talk about Boris. I know, Mario, you're being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. We will talk about Boris. It's a bit of a sad story, really, even if it's of his own doing. And he can't blame anyone else but himself. When you have, I suppose, the life of luxury for so long, you just get more greedier and you don't want that taken away from you. So we'll touch on that a little bit later on. A lot of the challenges played over the past week. We've got a full wrap on our website, thefirstserve.com.au. There's a couple of things certainly worth noting. Certainly from an Australian point of view, a young man that I am a fan of, his name is Rinki Hijikata, 21 years of age from Sydney. Talk about good incremental growth. He made his first Challenger semi-final. So he's been building up through the ITFs. He's been across to college in the States as well. He spent a lot of time on the road when a lot of the Aussies stayed home right throughout February, early March. Didn't get past Jay Clark event in that semi-final. Clark went on to win from Great Britain 6-1-4, 6-7-6. But he's gone from 375 to 233 this year, Rinki Hijikata, with 28 victories. So the next challenge is to get inside that top 200 and try and build. So, and I've got absolute confidence that he will certainly project to at least that around that 150 mark by the end of the year. So that is from an Australian perspective. And a man that, well, we're sort of forgotten about, really, is Jack Sock. I mean, Jack, you know, won the ATP Masters 1000 in Paris a few years ago. He got to world number 8. He got to a tour finals. One of the meanest forehands in the caper. Won his fourth Challenger title. His ranking is up to 123 now, so it's a far cry from where it was many years ago. But he won in Savannah, the Challenger there. Now, a guy we have to mention, and I'm sort of curious about a few of our Aussies down the pecking order, whether any of them are going to make some really serious leaps. But I am fascinated about the journey of Lee Tu. And I think everyone sort of knows the story now. He played as a junior. He left the tour 2014. He was only, I think, 17, 18 at the time. Went back to Adelaide, set up his own coaching business. And in 2020, during the onset of COVID, he decided he wanted to make a comeback. So he's played all those UTRs. He gets the wild card into the Australian Open, plays a couple of tour events. And then from about, what, August last year, he stepped out onto the ITF tour. So since August last year, including in Cairo over the weekend, he's won 6 ITF titles, 3 at 15K level, 3 at 25K level, had no ranking. He's now at 340 in the world. I've watched a heap of his matches over the last couple of weeks, and he plays some very, very good tennis. So where does he go? I mean, I think sky's the limit. He's going to get and play a couple of the challenges over the next 2 to 3 weeks. So that'll be the step up from the ITFs where, to be honest, he's a leap above a lot of his opponents. So I think he's actually on court now. So he's made the dash to Tunisia and to play another 15K. So we'll keep an eye on Lee Tu. Congratulations to him. It's all over our social media if you want to see a bit of vision. But his record, if you think about it, 128 wins, 20 losses in the last 3 years, UTR, ITF, tour level, and that opportunity he had to play at the Australian Open when he pushed Feliciano Lopez to 4 really, really tight sets. So that is what is going on this week. We'll come back with your texts, the mailbag tonight. We'll preview what is to come over the next week. Madrid's in full swing. I want to talk about Alex de Minaur. I'm more bullish about de Minaur than I ever have been as to the impact he can make long-term in professional tennis. And Vivian Christie's going to join us, editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine. All thanks to AATC, Australasian Academy of Tennis Coaches, providing quality coach education across the globe. Courses delivered by industry leaders and tennis business owners. Learn locally, coach globally, internationally endorsed. Inquire and enrol at aatc.tennis.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management. And glgcorp.com, the first serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to the First Serve Tuesday night edition. Hopefully you found us tennis fans tonight. We're in a different slot, different night. 1-300-736-736. You are welcome to call. Talk some tennis. Love talking tennis with you. Harry Belmore, he's gone quiet. Where is he? Harry, stats man. Come on, Harry, give me something. 1-300-736-736. So we've heard from the winners. We're in the middle of Madrid, well, certainly for the women. And we're at the start, pretty much. I'll talk about Alex de Minaur in just a moment. But Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal. It's an interesting watch, isn't it, this week? Djokovic certainly isn't firing on all cylinders. And Rafa's, what, first match back coming up likely tomorrow night, early Thursday morning, our time, from the broken rib. But here's a little bit of Novak heading into his first round match in Madrid.
I must say that the year, in professional sense, hasn't started the best possible for me.
Yuri Vesely takes out Novak Djokovic in Dubai.
It is Davidovich Fokina in the end just out-muscling a tiring Djokovic.
I experienced something that I've never experienced in my life before, and still feel some traces of that, you know, and it takes a little bit of time to adapt to those circumstances, but you know, it is what it is, and it's all a learning experience, a learning curve. Try to become a better person and stronger player mentally as well on the court. And I'm still kind of finding the form, you know, I'm not playing at the desired level, but I am getting there. It's a progress, and I have to be patient and believe that I'm on the right track, which I feel I am. Every season brings something new. Every day is pretty much different, you know. Even when at times you're confident and you feel like every shot is going well, you can easily lose the timing or tempo or the rhythm on the specific shot the very next day. So it's always really working on that kind of fine-tuning to make sure that you get to the desired level. I'm, you know, trying to use my experience in playing in these events and bringing back the memories from winning in Madrid also a few years, which was great. Last time I was here, I won the tournament. So, you know, hopefully I can perform at my best.
Well, there he is. Novak with a bit of crowd support at the end. Aero was rolling the disc underneath there. Look, who knows what's going to happen this week. Gael Monfils will be his opponent. Djokovic trying to work into some Grand Slam form with the French Open under 3 weeks away. We'll hear from Rafael Nadal very, very shortly. I want to talk about Alex de Minaur, though, because we spoke on the program a week ago after his semi-final epic against Carlos Alcaraz. I'm still dribbling. Carlos Alcaraz, how good's this kid, 18 years of age. And Holger Rune's coming as well. And there's plenty of other great young talent on the tour. But I'm really bullish, and I said this to Dwayne today on SCN, I'm really bullish about Alex de Minaur and where he's going. So we know from day one, he's always brought great energy, intensity, effort, running down every ball. His wheels are a huge asset. We know the frame that he's got, and we've wondered, where's his ceiling going to be? So he doesn't beat Alcaraz, but I reckon he takes a lot out of that Alcaraz match. And then I'm sitting up last night watching him beat Pedro Martinez, the Spaniard. He had the home crowd behind him. He's certainly not the player that de Minaur is. De Minaur didn't have a great second set, but gee, he reset beautifully in the third. There's no doubt the power's been increased. There's a little bit more beef on the serve. You don't want to play the drop shot against Alex de Minaur, because most times, 9 times out of 10, he'll get there and he'll dispense of it. And I think there's a look in his eye that it's now my time to step up and strike. He can certainly creep back into the top 20. So he's got to play Jannik Sinner next, 10th seed. He's 0-3 against Sinner. We go back to the Australian Open this year, 7-6, 6-3. Sofia 2020, 6-7, 6-4, 6-1. Next Gen Finals, when de Minaur was the favourite, a younger Sinner got over the top of him, 4-2, 4-1, 4-2, and that a different scoring format. So now it's time for Alex to step up and take one of these big guns. He hasn't been able to beat Tsitsipas, he hasn't been able to beat Sinner, and that's the evolution of Alex de Minaur that I'm looking forward to seeing. And I really believe that there is going to be a window. And I think I mentioned last week on the show that this next group are going to share the spoils. You might only get one or two windows to make a Grand Slam final, even maybe win one. But I think there's going to be a reward for Alex on the back of all the hard work that he and Adolfo, his coach, have put in, what, for the past 15, 16 years, when Alex picked up a racket as a young man, determined to make it in professional tennis. So I really believe that. So can't wait for Sinner and Demon Orr to see where Alex is at. Rafael Nadal, he's back. I mean, the last time I saw Rafa, when I was at Indian Wells, unfortunately, the body that day just couldn't quite get into the line, taking nothing away from Taylor Fritz, who played a great match. He beat Nadal fair and square. But this is not the ideal preparation, isn't it? Normally, he'd play a full clay court calendar, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid, Rome, into Roland Garros. So he heads into a tournament in 3 weeks where he's absolutely dominated. No one will ever break this amazing record of Nadal. He's not cherry ripe, but he is Rafael Nadal. Let's get his thoughts going into Madrid.
Well, happy to be back. This city is so special for me, and the crowd have been just amazing during all my tennis career here, you know, and they show me always the love and the support, even in a completely different way than the rest of the world. So for me, play here is always a huge thing. So enjoying the fact that I'm back, knowing that the situation is not perfect for me after 1 month and a half with the stress fracture on the rib. That's painful, and that's didn't allow me to practice at all for a while. So in terms of preparation, is not the ideal thing, but I am here just to try my best. That's it, and try to be improving every single day.
How frustrating has it been to having to come back from yet another injury?
It's tiring, you know. It happened too many times in my life, and of course it's not easy, you know, and it's not easy to accept every single time the challenge, but in that case I have experience on that. So just no time to complain much. Time to keep going, to stay positive, and to try to find positive things to be better and better every day.
With your experience, how many matches do you need to get back into it?
You never know. That's no mathematics on that. No, every single time is different, but victories helps, and spend time on court too. No, so of course I am better today than a couple of days ago. And then you need to play matches. And of course, it's not ideal to start in a Master 1000 here in Madrid that has the altitude and the draw that is very difficult for me. No, but just try to accept the process, the challenge, and the only thing that I can do is play with the right attitude and try my best.
Rafa, in beautiful rolling form there with the R's. He's back this week. Let's see how he fares. He just needs a bit of match play until you get back out there and compete. But if there's one man, he's done it so many times across his career, who can come back from injury and excel, it's Rafael Nadal. Interesting to watch Dominic Thiem at the moment. So he's 0-4 in the return. Played Andy Murray last night. I think, you know, Murray whispered in his ear when they shook hands at the net that it's going to take some time. Murray's been in that situation, being off the tour with injuries, and we know that Dominic Thiem was flying. You know, he was up there in the top three. He was a Grand Slam winner at the US Open, played just about more than anyone else. And then the wear and tear, the struggles through COVID. So he's trying to get back that beautiful single-handed backhand, but 0-4, ranking at 91, and it's going to take no doubt some time. Just off the text in regard to Alex Demon Orr, doesn't have the heavy artillery. I mean, you don't have to be the biggest hitter. You don't have to be the most powerful hitter to win a Grand Slam. I think he has increased the power. If you look at the way he's playing, really getting the ball through the court quicker, there's more in the game. He's beefed it up, Alex. And that comes through aging another year, certainly his body growing physically. So I think there is the window. My dream is to see John McEnroe in the umpire's chair yelling at players who argue line calls, saying, "You can't be serious." Thank you, David. Does Djokovic have any chance of making a Grand Slam final this year? I say more chance of him getting vaxxed than making a final. Well, certainly the jury's out right now. He has not had the normal program, the normal schedule for the first 5 months of the year for a man that was, well, right throughout his career, is in a rhythm of playing a type of schedule, which is adjusted over the years as you get older and you don't have to play as many of the lower events, so you have a little bit more time off in the prep and so forth. But I think the jury's, yeah, certainly out on that one. I can't watch clay court tennis with the sound on. The grunting and moaning is very off-putting. Will the authorities ever deem it noise pollution? I love clay court tennis. Personal opinion. I think the grind and The grueling aspect of it is so appealing. It's like Test cricket. It's a battle. It's a battle to win points. So I'm all for clay court tennis. Brett, by the way, your call on AFL games is first class. You're too kind. If Naomi Osaka, I was almost speechless last week, a couple of one-pointers the last 2 weeks, but if Naomi Osaka teams up with Kyrgios, how will she cope with his antics? Well, I'll ponder that if it actually ever happens. Nick mightn't even turn up. Naomi mightn't even turn up. Not totally in love with the tour, both of them. Boris Becker, the shortest price favourite ever to win the All England Prison Grass Tennis Tournament. Mario from Meslin Beach. I always like where you go, Mario. Just a little left of centre. Look, it's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? He could have got a maximum 7 years, Boris. He got 2.5 years. Plenty of reflection. It all caught up with him, there's no doubt. And I read a great column over the weekend, when he was 17, 18, winning all these Wimbledon titles, a really confident young man. He was just so sure of himself. He knew where he wanted to go, achieved incredible things. Certainly didn't play in the era when you could make the money that the players are making today, but he made a handsome sum. He set his life up. But then it all became a little bit too greedy. He wanted too much and you pay the price. So I'm glad to see there's not special rules for some, even when you're an elite sports person. So, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, really, but it is of his own doing. I need to mention our good friends at Hume Tennis and Community Centre. It's a mini Melbourne park in Melbourne's north. Tennis for everyone. Perfect also for coaches and players. If you're coming from interstate to train and compete, close to Melbourne Airport, accommodation available. I've seen the accommodation. Magnificent. Tim and the team will look after you. You can find out more at humetennis.com.au. So Madrid in full swing. That's what we're going to be keeping an eye on. No Australian in the ladies' draw. Isla Tomjanovic going out. Tough first round draw going out to Muguruza. Storm Sanders through to the quarterfinals with Zhang Shuai. He's normally the partner of Sam Stosur, but Sam will be heading over pretty shortly overseas, certainly for the grass. So they are the top seeds in Madrid through to the quarterfinals, which is a good result. And we've got a stack of Aussies going around at the 1-2-5 level. Jamie Foulis, Astra Sharma, Madison Inglis tonight. John Millman's playing a challenger. Max Purcell, Alex Vukic are all playing at challengers. Alexei Popperin, the struggles continue for Alexei. Had to qualify for an ATP challenger, which is a bit of a concern, but his ranking has certainly plummeted outside the top 100, but he has qualified for the main draw. So let's hope he can fire a shot, and there's plenty of Aussies on the ITF too. And that's what we do at the First Serve. We cover the full spectrum. You can do that through our socials if you're following us, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our website, thefirstserve.com.au. Coming back with the mailbag. There's plenty in that next.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Great to have your company as always, talking the world of tennis every week right across the SEN network. You can follow us at thefirstserve.com.au and across our socials. We've got that covered every single day. As we know, it's a sport that just does not stop at all. There is results coming in daily. We keep you across all the Aussies. Lots of topics that we're going to continue to explore, which I know you're very passionate about, it, particularly out in the domestic market. Just off the text, has King Carlos Alcaraz replaced Bernie Conlon as your favourite ever sportsman? Not sure if you're thinking of Mickey Conlon or Bernie Quinlan, but you got both of them together. I assume you may be meaning Bernie Quinlan, the super boot. Good question. I think your life is in chapters, isn't it? So back in 1983, I loved Bernie Quinlan. The best kick in the business. I didn't necessarily like Bernie in 1995 when he was coaching Fitzroy because we won one game. But Carlos Alcaraz, how can you take your eyes off this young man? So maybe he has. I'll ponder that one. Question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did Brett Phillips love Carlos Alcaraz? Righto. Well, it's true. It's 11. Yeah, it's probably off the Richter scale at the moment. Big question, Brett. Are these young guys tall, big serve, one-handed back? And I assume you're talking about the winners list from earlier. Well, you've got Sebastian Baez, 170 centimetres, like looking at Diego Schwartzman in the mirror. So he's packing a mean punch. He's tough to play, gets a lot of balls back. I mean, this is the game for all shapes and sizes, isn't it? So You don't have to be John Isner. You don't have to be Diego Schwartzman. I mean, they're both proven at different dimensions that you can play the game and reach certainly the highest of levels. Brett, what is happening with Kokkinakis? I'll just rephrase that off the text, how that came in. Well, he'll be back overseas pretty shortly, so he's had a fairly big block to start the year. Indian Wells, Miami, Davis Cup, the Australian Summer. So he came back to Melbourne for a few weeks just to recharge. Obviously, the management of Thanasi is really, really important, that his body stands up for the year. And now the next step is to try and go from the 90s closer to that top 50. So he needs a couple of good results, and let's hope the second year can be kind to him, form-wise, but also his body, that it just keeps holding up. Let's delve into the mailbag.
You've got mail.
We have indeed. Now, we tweeted out a number of weeks ago that the ABC TV three-part investigation into Tennis Australia was going to take place. And things went very, very, very quiet. So I had this drift into the mailbag this week. So one of the ABC journalists has let a colleague of mine know today that the report has not been scrapped, but rather parked. And that colleague has given no reason as to why, but it is still happening. So apparently it's still on the table. We will wait and see. I also got this into the mailbag. I found out over the weekend the list of people who are staff members at the Tennis Australia Brisbane Academy. 24 in total, 14 of those are full-time coaches. As for the number of junior players who live and train there, it has been suggested this year there are only 16. How can that be right? At a ratio of 1 coach to 4, which is still a great performance ratio, there should be 50 players in that environment regularly training to validate the estimated $3 million annually in wages, and that's without touring costs, Brisbane accommodation, etc. If you could get the names of the players who are scholarship holders, that would be great. Why wouldn't TA list them on their webpage or social media platforms and be proud of who they are and the coaches they work with? It has taken me 6 months to get the full list of the staff. Why all the secrecy? Anyway, I put an inquiry into Tennis Australia today. I put that very question to them, and TA's response was this. We like to be fair and balanced on this show. In terms of the National Tennis Academy athletes, there is a mix of those based in Brisbane and those at home. As you can imagine, with the various travel difficulties and border closures over the past few years, there are probably a few more home-based players than there usually would be. The mix at the moment is 15 athletes based in Brisbane and a further 18 home-based. As we discussed a couple of weeks ago, yes, I did go into TA and had a meeting with their media team. We are planning a class of 2022 opportunity with the NTA athletes, which I mentioned you would be more than welcome to attend, which is my intention to get up and have a look at the academy. Ideally, this would have taken place earlier this year and be a great opportunity to introduce the cohort, do some nice media, create content, update profiles. But this was delayed due to the catastrophic flooding in Queensland. The QTC was impacted, and the NTA programs, although proceeding uninterrupted, are a bit spread out at the moment until all the repairs are completed. As you know, Chris Marley heads up the NTA. Brent Larkin is the NTA head coach. The NTA coaching team is made up of Mark Draper, Andrew Roberts, Des Tyson, Dave Taylor, and Brett Hunter. Olivia Rich, Cody George, and Gavin Van Pepperzeel are performance development coaches. As well as the NTA athletes, the pro players aged 24 plus have full access to NTA facilities and all athlete services such as physio, nutrition, strength and conditioning. So that was a response back from TA today. It is my intention to go up and have a look at the academy. A lot was made of the performance review that came out a couple of years ago, or was done over a couple of years. And obviously COVID has certainly played a part in the NTA maybe not operating to its full capacity. And obviously the weather in Queensland this year has been a major issue as well. But I'll get up there and take a look for myself. We'll bring you plenty of that on the first serve and take you inside that academy. But I appreciate these views from inside Tennis Australia about the state of Australian tennis and the development and the participation numbers across the country. And then there is the views of those outside who are at the coalface who see it very, very differently. We have Melbourne's leading synthetic grass court surface and construction specialist, ASTI Tennis Courts, on board with us. They're trusted by Melbourne tennis clubs and councils. Check out aste.com.au. I also received this from Bree. Brett and the team at the first serve. I just caught up on the latest episode and really enjoyed the chats with Sarah and Betty. We had Sarah Stone, Betty Sekulowski, two fine coaches in the studio last week. Great insight into how many junior teams or junior tennis operates in Australia, how junior tennis operates in Australia. I just wanted to say something on Brett's comments on Pam Shriver's recent interview with the Tennis Podcast in the Telegraph newspaper, as I was a little disheartened with what he said. Pam's interview on the Tennis Podcast in particular was insightful and detailed, and I don't believe designed to make accusations against Don Candy. She speaks well of him while also recognising the power imbalance of their relationship and the ensuing emotional damage that caused her, as well as how it impacted her tennis career during those years. Her main focus was bringing attention to the issue of inappropriate and destructive relationships between coaches and players. In the follow-up Tennis Podcast episode, David Law mentions a top coach and had contacted him after hearing Pam's story and recounted the many things he has witnessed on both tours in regard to power imbalances and damaging coach-player relationships. I've heard Renee Stubbs mention the coaches by name actually before this latest story on the Racquet Podcast and their belittling and inappropriate behaviour towards female players on the tour. Bianca Andreescu has just mentioned this weekend the importance of Pam raising the issue because it makes it easier for others to come forward. I do hope the first serve revisits the story because there is nuance to Pam's story and she is focused on the wider issue of what has been done to protect players on both tours. Bree, thank you. I know you're a loyal listener to this program. And you're absolutely right. So last week on the show, because we're always running out of time, but I did do it as the last piece. And we had to be word friendly, quite economical. I didn't have a real chance to expand, but I did go back and have a listen today. And I did make the comment last week that there were no accusations in that story from Pam Shriver about her former coach of any sexual abuse. What I probably didn't mention last week is that Pam, whilst admitting it was probably an inappropriate relationship, she had a lot of positive things to say about her partnership, if you like, with Don Candy, who coached her at such a young age, was a huge mentor in her life, took her to some great results, also admitting that, in hindsight, in reflection, that it was probably inappropriate what they were doing, but you're in the moment and things happen. And sometimes you can't help in life who you like and who you fall for. So all that's been very transparent from Pam. So yeah, I didn't get a chance to really expand on that last week. I think it is a really serious issue, not just in tennis. This could happen right across sport, whether it's coach players. We've heard the discussion in AFL football this week about the treatment of female umpires. So there's a lot in that space that, you know, certainly needs to be brought to the table. The more people that speak about it, certainly the better. And look, I would love to get Pam on the program. We might try and hunt her down over the next couple of weeks and see if she'll have a chat to us and expand on those thoughts. I enjoy Pam's commentary, and what she said was extremely worthy. So I wasn't trying to probably diminish it last week. We were just a little short for time and I did probably rush through it. So we will continue to follow that. And Bree, keep sending your correspondence in. And if any of you have got any anecdotal stories you want to share with us, more than happy for you to send it through the firstservesen@gmail.com. You can contact us all week. Tell us what's happening at the coalface of the game out there. And is this actually an issue within Australian tennis? Because there's people like you who listen to our show who know the inner workings far better than certainly I do. We'll take a break. Vivian Christie is going to join us very shortly, editor of Australian Tennis Magazine. I'll tell you about some of the other content we've got going at the first serve.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management. And glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to The First Serve. There is plenty of content to take a look at in your own time at The First Serve, apart from our weekly show here on the radio. Crunching the numbers for the players, coaches, for those that just love their stats and data. Episode 2 is out right now with Stephen Huss and Chris Tonce.
We've had some conversations around how do we practice more effectively. Some of my research, I found this really interesting research article that I sort of shared some of the details with you. And I thought it'd be great to share with the listeners and kind of go through it, because it's one thing to have data and statistics at your disposal and to look at them. But don't you think, or what's your thoughts on then using that and applying it to the way you practice and perhaps even adapting and changing in the way that you, you know, sort of structure your coaching lessons? I think all of us coaches have a sort of a way we do things, but don't you think that data and statistics should start to drive the practice court a little bit more than perhaps it has in the past?
Yeah, last week we talked about how important it was first serve return and the first shot after. So knowing that, how do we make sure that that's somehow implemented in the practice? And I know for me, it's really changed things the way I practice. And even just talking to you, coming up with different ways where we maybe serve first, definitely don't neglect returns. So it's very challenging to perhaps change the practice, but having it structured so it does kind of simulate the most important part of tennis. I always say the two most important shots in tennis are serve and return. I don't care how awesome your forehand looks. If you can't get the ball in the court to start the point, does it really matter?
Yeah, that is Chris Tonte, Stephen Huss. Crunching the numbers, you can find that at thefirstserve.com.au. Subscribe to us, whatever podcast platform you're on. Vivian Christie, editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine, has joined us. Welcome back to the show, Viv.
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Going well. Ash Barty on the front. It sort of brings a little tear to my eye, in a sense. She's got Uluru in the background, a dream ending, her brilliant journey. That's the latest edition, our farewell to our number one.
Yeah, it was... I've put a lot of magazines together over my time in tennis, but I guess this was an edition like no other that we've published, really. I mean, we started with the great story of Ash in Central Australia soon after she won the Australian Open. And honestly, we then also included her retirement tribute. So, yeah, there's a lots of different sides of Ash, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt. What are the other highlights of this edition, Viv?
Yeah, we delve into the new number one in women's tennis after Ash's retirement. We've got a feature on Iga Świątek and also the exciting Carlos Alcaraz. So he's lots to read about there. Lots from our Aussie players as well. We have Alexi Poprin talking about his early time on tour. Ayla Tomljanović takes us through her match day, and Tanasi Kokkinakis talks about his nutrition in a day.
Great stuff. The Australian Tennis Magazine, it's out bi-monthly. Of course, you can subscribe, Viv.
Yes, you can. And you can also order any editions online at tennismag.com.au.
Beautifully done. Vivian Christie, editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine. And just before we go, our newest podcast offering, which has dropped the last couple of days, is What Are You Doing Here? It's hosted by professional tennis coach Rowan Williams. I actually coached Rowan in footy 30 years ago, who right throughout the year will be catching up with people working on the Pro Tour. His first guest is Brad Stein, formerly the coach of Jim Courier, currently coaching American Tommy Paul.
What am I doing here? I'm a coach on the tour. I've been a coach on the tour for a long time now. It's been my full-time job. It's funny because people that don't understand what we do as coaches on the tour sometimes give you the impression when you say that you're a coach on the tour, they're like, you know, what else do you do? Or people ask me what I do and I say I'm a tennis coach. And in the United States, at least, people often say, oh, you coach at a high school?
Yeah, high school or country club.
Yeah, yeah. Or they assume that you're a teaching pro at a club, you know. So the fact that we're coaching high-performance players and professional players is a little bit different gig. I've been lucky enough to be on the tour pretty much full-time. A few little breaks here and there, but pretty much full-time for, man, like a little over 30 years now. I did run my own little academy for a little while, and I had a stint where I went and worked for the USTA, the United States Tennis Association, for about 3.5 years or so. But even when I was with the USTA, I was still back on the tour, primarily the Challenger Tour at that time, but I was still kind of on the tour. And Tommy and I started in 2019, just after the US Open.
Part one, Brad Stein, Play USA, Chase Ferguson from Melbourne. That's out this week. Thanks to the 5pm Collective. Australian alcohol delivered, 5pmcollective.com. Talk next week.